This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Hour 3 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. As we continue to get ready for the NFL Draft, which begins tomorrow night. We added Day 3 of our mock draft earlier this afternoon. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page and you can find the show podcasted there. The NFL draft begins tomorrow night. Let's continue to get ready for it and break it down with somebody who's used to being in those war rooms making selections. As we're now joined by Jeff Diamond, who used to run NFL teams, worked for the Vikings for a number of years, former GM there, was the executive of the year in the NFL, and also was the president of the Tennessee Titans as well, and is on Twitter at Jeff Diamond NFL, and he's with us now. Jeff, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, Luke. How you doing?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. Let's first, I do want to ask you, as somebody who's gone through this before, as an outsider, I'm always curious. When we get to the draft, what is it like in that room? Do you guys, you have your plan, you feel comfortable, or can it get a little chaotic in a war room as the draft's unfolding?
Well, it's kind of funny because when you see the draft cam on NFL Network or whatever it's on, and it looks like everybody's high-fiving and everybody's all excited. Well, there are a lot of downtimes too in a draft room also, when especially after you make a pick and then you're waiting an hour or 2 hours for your next pick. But because really the work has been already done, more or less, in terms of stacking your boards and ranking the players and doing all your final checks and final tweaks to the draft board. So when you get into the draft room, you really want to be prepared and have your players lined up so that once you get on the clock or a couple picks before, you've got a couple of players, four or five players on a sideboard that are the people that you're definitely looking at and considering. And so it's certainly a nerve-wracking experience when you're on the clock. And it's also, especially as you're fielding calls from other teams that want to trade up or you may be considering trading down if you think a player will still be there and you want to pick up an extra couple picks. So it's a combination of very exciting, some downtime, a lot of disappointment when you see really good players fall off the board that you're interested in. And it's kind of a very superstitious room at times. I remember in some of our draft rooms, if you uttered the name of a player that you wanted to take, it was considered really bad luck, and that guy was going to get taken by somebody else immediately. So it's just a combination of emotions and excitement. I love the draft during my years in the NFL, and I still love following it. It's an exciting time. It's a time of optimism for teams.
Yeah, I hear that a lot from former or current executives and GMs, that this is the favorite time of the year to all the work that you put in, and then you go out there and you add these guys to your team, and it's exciting. Let's talk about this year's draft. First, by starting off, just broadly, when you look at this draft class, who do you think is the best player? Who stands out to you as one of your favorite prospects in this entire draft class?
Well, I think it's hard to pick one player because obviously there's so much talent in any draft. And we always kind of felt that there were about 8 to 10 blue-chip players in every draft. And when you talk blue-chip, you're talking perennial Pro Bowl caliber players, and there's certainly those kind of guys in this draft, guys like Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan and Trayvon Walker of Georgia, who sounds like one of those two guys is going to go number one to Jacksonville, and certainly Neil the tackle from Alabama, and there's some other really excellent tackles in this draft, North Carolina State, Ekwonu and Cross. So a lot of really good players that you would consider blue-chip guys. I think the cornerbacks are going to be really interesting to see where they fall with Sauce Gardner, a guy that didn't give up a touchdown in college at Cincinnati, and been rumored to possibly the Jets or the Giants. And I know living here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis-St. Paul, I know the Vikings would certainly love to get a shot at Derek Stingley Jr. out of LSU. But the question is, will he make it to number 12 where the Vikings are? And so the cornerback crop is pretty solid. Booth from down your way, Clemson, is a good player and could be certainly a first-round pick also. And so I think there's a lot of talent in this draft. I think also one of the interesting things and what the teams will be following, and one of the things I've paid very close attention to, always were the quarterbacks. And especially if you didn't need a quarterback, if you already had your franchise quarterback, what you would love to see is a bunch of quarterbacks get picked early. And guys like Pickett and Willis and Howell. And I don't know if those guys are going to go top 10, top 15, top 20. It's really kind of a mystery how teams are looking at this quarterback class. But I know that from a team standpoint, the more quarterbacks picked early, if you don't need one, the better, because that helps have other players at other positions fall to you. So the quarterback crop will be really interesting to follow.
Yeah, that's a good point. When you look at these quarterbacks, we, of course, focus more on the quarterbacks than any other position because of their level of importance. When you look at these quarterbacks, you know, how do you assess them? How many of these quarterbacks would you be willing to take with a first-round pick?
Yeah, I think it's pretty iffy, honestly. And I think they've all the top guys have talent. I'm just not sure they're top 10 caliber guys. And so I certainly wouldn't be surprised if somebody does get picked high because, as you said, the quarterback position is so important. But I wouldn't be surprised if they fall into that 15 to 20 range also, and maybe there's only a couple that go in the first round. But Malik Willis is probably the most athletic guy, interesting from that standpoint of what he can bring to a team. And so you think about a team such as the Lions, well, they're not going to take him at number two, but then they've got another first round pick late in the first round, and they could jump on him then. And I think that's what also makes this draft really interesting is all these teams with multiple first round picks. And I've never seen a draft with so many teams, eight teams that have multiple first round picks. And that to me has never happened in my experience following the draft for 20, 30 plus years. And conversely, you got eight teams without a first round pick. And I've been there too, having traded away the number one, and you're sitting there for 5-6 hours on Thursday night, and it's very difficult to watch all these good players fall. And certainly there'll be a tendency for those teams without a number one to try to trade back into the first round and maybe give up their first rounder next year, and which will be interesting. And especially for teams, potentially they're looking for quarterbacks. Supposedly the quarterback crop next year is a little stronger, and so maybe we will see some teams being willing to trade back who need quarterbacks and may consider doing that to have a better arsenal of picks next year to go after a quarterback.
That's the perfect lead into my next question. I wanted to ask you about this because I said for the Carolina Panthers, I came up with that idea. That's what they should do. Trade out of that number six pick this year, and instead of getting draft collateral or capital this year, get it next year where you can move up and get one of those quarterbacks. So my question for you, Jeff, as someone who's done this before, and it sounds like based off of what you just said, that I guess it is part of the process. How often do teams, you know, maybe punt at least on a position for 1 year and instead make a plan for next year? Like, how often do teams look ahead like that to the next year's draft?
It's very difficult to do. And Matt Rhule, I'm not sure that he has the I know he signed a long-term contract, but even still, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that he can afford to sit another year and wait. If they want a quarterback, maybe they trade down from six and grab one of these other guys like Pickett. Willis may be more of a long-term project, but it's hard to wait a year in modern-day sports, in any sport, because the lifespan of a team executive is not guaranteed, or a coach. And so I think Carolina will be an interesting team to watch, certainly, and a lot of rumblings that they may take one of those offensive linemen, but we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, certainly. Talking with Jeff Diamond, former NFL GM and team president and executive of the year in the NFL. Now, when you were in Minnesota, you guys drafted Randy Moss, a little bit of a different situation. He didn't have injury concerns, but there were some other things that allowed him to slide down the draft board. I look at the NFL draft this year, you see Jameis Williams, the wide receiver out of Alabama, Stingley, the corner out of LSU, that have injury concerns that may have them drop down on some draft boards. So my question for you, Jeff, would be, as a GM, how do you weigh that talent and on-field production with some of the other concerns off the field, whether it's personal stuff or even potential injuries when you look at where you should draft these guys?
Yeah, I think you really have to do your due diligence and research and hopefully have some inside information on some of these guys, such as Stingley and the Alabama receiver Williams. It's just very difficult to be able to draft a guy very high that has a question injury-wise or character-wise. And I think certainly that could cause those guys to fall a little bit. And they've certainly got great tape and from when they played. But, for example, Stingley was better his freshman year than he was the next 2 years. So how do you weigh that? It was his assistant support around him. And, yeah, and the Randy Moss example for us in Minnesota, we were fortunate that we had a scout in-house who had worked with the Marshall coaches in that year. And so we knew that with his background and what had happened, some of the character issues coming out for Randy, that had happened basically out of high school. And the Marshall coaches said he had no problems during his time at Marshall. And we had a scout that had that information, and we never thought he'd reach number 21 in the first round in 1998 because we had him rated as a top five pick. And as he started to fall and he kept falling, then it became more and more possible. And so as the story went, we got on the phone with Chris Carter, our all pro wide receiver, and said, "Chris, if we draft Randy, will you help mentor him?" And he said, "Absolutely, because I know what kind of talent he is." And that's kind of how it all unfolded, and we picked him, and he never was suspended, never was arrested during his career, and of course had a Hall of Fame career, and that particular 1998 rookie season was Rookie of the Year, 17 touchdown receptions, and helped us go to a 15-1 season that year. So he was fantastic as a player, and it just, again, having a little bit of inside information, but doing your due diligence and research on those kind of players. And then for the injured guys, you really have to rely on your team doctors who are doing the analysis at the combine and looking at the x-rays and examining these players and saying, okay, what's the likelihood that there's going to be a recurrence of an issue here or not? And so I think in that regard, you can kind of make a decision. And certainly the medical treatment of things such as ACLs and those kind of injuries are so much better these days. You see guys coming back all the time.
You were, you worked in the NFL for about three decades. You've been involved in a lot of drafts. When you look back, was Randy the draft pick that maybe you're most proud of, getting him 21st overall in the career he went on to, or are there some others that stand out too?
Yeah, I think certainly Randy was up there high on the list, no doubt about it. And we had a lot of really successful drafts in the 90s and in the early 2000s in Tennessee, but in the 90s in Minnesota drafted Todd Stussy and Corey Stringer back-to-back years at offensive tackle. They both became Pro Bowl players and anchors of our offensive line. Robert Smith's great running back that we drafted. But Randy probably stands out in that regard. And sometimes it's a guy in the later rounds that you draft or even an undrafted player. And I signed John Randall as an undrafted player out of Texas A&I. And when he was working out for teams, he weighed 240 pounds. And when he showed up for training camp, he weighed 270. I paid him a $5,000 signing bonus. He ended up in the Hall of Fame as one of the great defensive tackles of all time. So you never know how it's going to turn out. But certainly a lot of success stories and a lot that didn't work out so well. But fortunately, more were good than bad, and that's what you need as a GM.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking with Jeff Diamond. Before we let you go, Jeff, last thing. as a GM in those war rooms when you're making the selections, do you ever feel like you're reaching for a pick and willing to do so? Or do you always feel like, hey, if we're picking this guy, right, we're picking him because we like him at this spot. As a GM, do you willingly reach or do you feel like you never reach for a pick?
I don't think you really feel like you reach. I think if you're respecting your grades and your draft board and you've got them up and as the rounds unfold and a guy's there, then he should be worthy of that pick. And I think you have to have confidence in drafting players that you're respecting your grades, respecting your draft board. And I think where teams get into trouble is when they, especially in the first round, if they draft a player based on need over the quote-unquote best athlete available, it sounds kind of like a cliche, but it really isn't. It's really true, and I learned that early on in my Viking career, working with our excellent personnel people, that we never passed up a potentially great player to take a good player at a position of need. And unless if we had a franchise quarterback, we weren't going to go draft another quarterback if that was our highest-rated player. But otherwise, we're going to take our highest-rated player, especially in the first round. And if it's not at a need position, so be it. If it matches up, hey, great. That's the best of all worlds. But that doesn't usually happen. So I think teams get into trouble when they go need, especially in the first round.
Yeah, that's interesting. Talking with Jeff Diamond, former NFL Executive of the Year, was the GM with the Vikings and then the president with the Tennessee Titans, and spent about 3 decades working in NFL front offices. On Twitter at Jeff Diamond NFL. Jeff, appreciate all the time and the insight and the stories as we get ready for the draft, and enjoy the NFL draft here this weekend.
Hey, thanks, Luke. Take care. All the best.
Hey, likewise. Appreciate it. Jeff Diamond joining us, former longtime GM in the NFL, who has been in those war rooms. I've said on record, I think it was earlier this week, you know, sports fans, we see some, not all. If I could get a behind-the-scenes, I would think I would just love to be in a war room during a draft to see how it all plays out. The whole process, and I know, as Jeff said, most of the work's done. You have your board. You trust your process, your work, and you just work off the draft board. Almost like it would be ridiculous to compare us to an NFL GM. But, you know, like when you do fantasy football, you have same idea. You have your players you like. Okay, he comes off the board. All right, let me go to my next option. I don't know how chaotic your drafts are for fantasy football. That's not to say that we can go draft an NFL team. But I think these guys, same idea. They have their board. They work off of it. I don't know if it's too chaotic unless you talk about drafts or a real surprise in the draft. But I would love to just be a fly on the wall of some of these rooms and see how these teams get through draft night with everything that's involved. It seems like just such a fun process to me. Appreciate the time from Jeff Diamond giving us a little sneak peek. And interesting what he said there at the end about, you know, you got to draft at least in the first round, draft best player available instead of need. If you're talking about a really elite player that you really like that you just can't turn down, I get it. But I've always been of the school of thought that you have to draft need more often than best player, because this is an extreme example, right? But you wouldn't draft the best player. What if you wind up with, I don't know, 3 defensive backs and you have no defensive linemen? Like, you know, sure, you have a lot of talent on that team, but I kind of talked about this earlier with Durant and Kyrie. You can't just put talent together and think like, well, we got a lot of talented players. We're going to go win a championship. You got to make sure they're all good fits. You have to have a balanced defense. And the example that Colin Cowherd always uses is if that, you know, if your wife sent you to the store to go get milk and eggs and you came back with a rake and a rake and an umbrella. It's like, what? This wasn't on the list. And you say, yeah, but it was the best deal in the store. Like, yeah, but we don't need this stuff. And it's the same idea. You kind of have to get what you need instead of just the best deal or the best option. But anyways, appreciate the time from Jeff Diamond. Hey, Mother's Day is coming up. It'll be here before you know it, May 8th, next weekend, a week from Sunday. So make it easy on yourself and treat your mother to a wonderful day. Right? They deserve it. The Harbor View Restaurant and Lounge is putting together a great Mother's Day buffet. And they got all sorts of great options. They got some prime rib going on. We got some shrimp creole. We got some fried chicken. We got creamy baked mac and cheese. That sounds delicious. You got red rice, collard greens, mashed potatoes, vegetable medley. They got a salad bar, potato salad. They got all sorts of desserts, so on and so forth. We could spend all afternoon talking about the great menu for the Mother's Day buffet at the Harborview Restaurant and Lounge. Of course, on Mother's Day, Sunday, May 8th, 12 p.m. to 5 p.m., it's $45 for adults, kids 11 and under, $14, seniors, $39. Reservations only, so make your reservation today. You can call them, 843-556-6710. 7100. But make your reservations before they fill up. And make sure you treat your mother to something nice on Mother's Day. 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Mother's Day. So there you go. I'm going on a trip Mother's Day weekend, and it's not for Mother's Day. And my buddies and I scheduled a trip, and we did not look at the calendar and realize, like, oh, shoot, that's Mother's Day. So, Mom, sorry, I am going out of town, but it's not going to be to go see my mother on Mother's Day, unfortunately. But treat your mother to a nice buffet on Mother's Day at the Harborview Restaurant and Lounge. Coming up, we've been going through our mock draft throughout this week. I do want to circle back to the Panthers and the Falcons as we get ready for the draft tomorrow night to try to figure out what those two teams may do in the top 10. And we'll do that next. The Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
To number one. Suddenly everyone loved to hear him sing a song. Watching the world go by, surprising it goes so fast.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from former NFL GM Jeff Diamond breaking down the NFL draft, as we'll continue to do so. And tomorrow, circle back to the mock draft and add some more picks on. But, of course, you know, the focus would be on the Panthers at 6 and the Falcons at 8. Let's zero in on these two for the official mock draft of the Morrow Midday Show, as revealed yesterday as part of the mock draft. The Panthers, we have taken an offensive lineman, and the Falcons taking a wide receiver at number 8. When it comes to the Panthers at number 6, right, the big debate, of course, quarterback, offensive lineman, or the wrinkle is if you trade back. That would be like the, since we've been talking roulette, that's like the zeros on the roulette board, right, where you're betting colors, and then they throw in the curve that neither one's a winner with the zeros. You could guess wide receiver, offensive lineman, or we're going to get the curveball of, actually, they're not going to pick at all. They're trading back. So that's the third option that is plausible. We'll see what Carolina does. Now, when it comes to the quarterback position, because we know the Panthers, their most glaring need is quarterback. And while I always say that's the one position, right, if this is where we're a drinking game, you'd be drunk by now. I've said it probably already 3 times today. The one position I would reach for in the NFL draft is the quarterback. Everything else, I can be selective. But when it comes to a quarterback, even if you don't think Kenny Pickett is worth the 6th overall pick, if you like him enough that you believe Kenny Pickett, he could be our franchise quarterback, take, I don't care if it's the first pick, take him whenever. That's how important those positions are. I would not pass on a quarterback that you like, that you could think could be the solution, because you think, like, well, he's not a top 10 pick. Who cares? Unless we're talking about, like, a 7th round draft pick, you're taking him in the 1st round, which would never happen. But I'm not talking extremes here. But for Kenny Pickett, he's probably going to go in the 1st round at some point, and if you believe he's your answer, or Malik Willis, take him at 6. Don't play around. Don't even trade back and say, like, ah, we'll just try to get him in the teens. Don't mess around. You need a quarterback. It's that important. Here was Dominique Foxworth. Like, I don't know if the Panthers are going to go quarterback. I have no idea. We played the audio earlier from Scott Fitterer, who said they're going to try to add a quarterback this weekend. But, again, maybe that's all just smoke signals here, or try to throw teams off. We have no idea. We'll find out tomorrow night. We can guess in the meantime. But here is Dominique Foxworth talking about who he believes the best quarterback in this draft class is if the Panthers were to go in that direction.
It's got to be Malik. Like, I think he has – we see that the way that the league is going is these really powerful arm, strong arm, kind of toolsy is the word that people like to use, quarterbacks. He's that guy in this draft. He's not prototypical height, but he's a guy with an arm that's going to get your attention of all the guys in the draft. And, like, I think he's certainly not Josh Allen, but I think that players like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes is another guy who was not super highly touted coming out of college, but we saw his arm, and Andy Reid thought he could do something with that. So I think that it's potential there, but I don't really know that there is one. But if there's a quarterback that I'm drafting, that's where I'm going.
That was Dominique Foxworth, his opinion. Malik Willis. The Panthers will have to obviously make their own decision if they do go quarterback at number 6. We had Jeff Diamond join us last segment, as he acknowledged Malik Willis more of a project. Kenny Pickett is the more ready-made solution if the Panthers need to try to win now or don't have the patience to wait for somebody like a Malik Willis. But I thought this was also interesting. John Middlecoff is a former scout. He now has his own podcast. He was talking about this draft class. He made an interesting point that Jeff Diamond actually brought up last segment as well. With this draft class not being a very strong quarterback draft class, that affects everybody. The trickle-down effect becomes really interesting because teams now are not going to be clogging the top picks with quarterbacks. Instead, they're going to be taking the top players. So if you don't have a top pick, right, you could be missing out on some of the top players. Here's what Middlecoff's had to say about this NFL draft class.
This draft sucks. And part of that is doesn't have that much star power. Why? It doesn't have any quarterbacks. I don't think there's one quarterback in this draft who should go in the top 32 picks. Now, that doesn't mean that guys won't. But I actually think that less quarterbacks are going to go in the first round than people assume, like three or four are going to go. My guess would be two. Because I think if you are going to draft some of these guys, you're going to lose your job. Guys are going to get fired. Now, you could argue that happens no matter what, right? If Zach Wilson sucks, they're going to lose their job in New York in the next couple years, right? If Trevor Lawrence sucks, more people will get fired in Jacksonville because they'll be blamed, not the quarterback. The quarterbacks pushed down players last year. Well, no quarterbacks are going to go high, so there's not going to be, you know, one of the star offensive linemen or star defensive linemen there at 11 or 12. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, interesting point from Middlecoff. And Jeff Diamond brought it up last segment that, you know, if you don't need a quarterback, you want these other teams. So I'll take a quarterback because then it pushes the talent, the other talent, back to you for your team needs. Think about last year in the draft. The first three picks were all quarterbacks. So the draft really didn't begin for the non-quarterback teams until pick four last year. That pushes the talent back. Then you got two more quarterbacks by the time we got to the 15th pick. So if you don't need a quarterback and you were picking, say, last year, maybe 20th, well, there was five guys that now, right, the 15th pick was really like the 10th pick. If you were picking at 20th, you could really get the 15th best player for a team that doesn't need a quarterback. This year, it's different because there is an opportunity. There is a case to be made that maybe the quarterback does not go until 20th in the draft. And so if that's the case and you don't need a quarterback anyways, right, like it's good for the quarterback needy teams could really benefit from this. Because if you're picking, say, 20th, and you want to get a quarterback, you're thinking like, oh, well, we're going to have the pick of the litter. Nobody's taking the three of these guys in the top 20, and we like all three. But the flip side is, if you don't need a quarterback, you're not in the market for a quarterback, it's going to be a little bit tougher this year. Because the best players are going to come off the board the first number of picks. And if you're picking 10th, like John just said in that sound clip, right, you're picking 10th, well, you truly are picking like the 10th best player. In most years, because of the quarterback market, you push some talent back. Now, to relate this back to the Panthers, if you're looking to trade out of six, now here's the thing for the Panthers. If you are looking to trade from the sixth overall pick and you have these two quarterbacks graded the same, Pickett or Malik Willis, then it makes sense to trade out because you can still draft one a little bit later on. I don't know if two quarterbacks are going to go in the top 10. Maybe you trade back to, well, I don't know, pick a random team. Trade back to 13. I think the Texans have the 13th pick. I don't know if they'd be trading with the Panthers, but you get the idea. If you trade back to the teens, you could probably get one of those guys nonetheless. But to that point that John Middlecoff just made, if you are not going to draft a quarterback, then you might as well just pick six. If you want to draft a lineman instead of a quarterback or you want to take the best player available, just pick him at six. The only reason why you would trade back is if you didn't like anybody, if you wanted more draft picks, or if you thought you could get one of those quarterbacks later on anyways and add some more draft picks to your pool as well. Don't trade back and then just take a lineman or defensive player later in the first round, because you're just passing up good talent, right? Pick six and get one of the six best players in this draft if that's the direction you want to go. Get one of those offensive linemen instead of trading back. And sure, you add more draft picks, but who cares if it's a third rounder? Like, that's not as big of a deal as a top 10 pick. And even if you're picking in the teens, it's not going to be as good of a pick as it normally is in the draft because the quarterback market is so watered down. Then you have the Atlanta Falcons at number eight. And I do agree with the mock draft here of the Morrow Midday Show that I think you have to look wide receiver. It's a wide receiver deep draft. They need playmakers on both sides of the football, but certainly wide receivers. Here is Mike Tannenbaum, former GM, talking about who he believes is the most underrated wide receiver in this draft class.
Jameson Williams, University of Alabama. He has an ACL injury. That's why he's underrated. If we were running a team greedy for the next 10 years, I don't care if it's one, two, or three, let's get him. He could be Tyreek Hill. He is uncoverable. He destroyed Georgia when he was healthy. So to me, he's underrated if he doesn't go in the top five.
If he doesn't go in the top five, how about that? Now, We were discussing this last segment with Jeff Diamond in regards to Randy Moss. That was different because Moss wasn't injured. It was off-the-field stuff. He got kicked out of Florida State. He had maybe some questions about substance use. And even I think back to like a Dan Marino dropped to the end of the first round because of the idea that, you know, he liked some substances as well. That's a little bit different than injuries. But we've seen guys, it doesn't always work out this way. You only remember the ones that do work out. But when guys do fall in the draft and there's that team that's willing to take the chance, right? Marino had a pretty good career. Randy Moss, pretty good career. More recently, Adrian Peterson, that was an injury concern. Broke his collarbone in college, and they thought, like, oh, he's not going to be the same. And he dropped to 7, which was still a high pick, but he should have been drafted towards the top of the draft. And the Vikings got him, and that worked out pretty well. So my point being that a lot of times for these players, you know, Deebo Samuel went in the second round, had injury concerns. When healthy, he's been really good. So a lot of times teams that the ones that are willing to take the risk on these guys that are great on the field but coming off an injury, you take the chance that, hey, they'll be okay, they'll rebound, they'll be fine, they'll be healthy for the most part in the NFL, and they're so talented that they have pretty good careers. And there are a lot of examples of guys who dropped in the draft board and then had really good careers, and the team that took a chance on them were really fortunate. Maybe Jameson Williams will be one of those guys. Top five, though, seems like a bit of a stretch. But if you want to tell me the Falcons take him at 8, yeah, I could see that. I understand. I think if he was healthy, right, he might be the number one wide receiver in the draft. But I don't know if I'm taking a wide receiver, any of them, in the top 5, especially with how deep of a wide receiver talent pool we have this year. And I go back to what I've been saying about wide receivers. I would not break the bank for a wide receiver already in the league. I would not overextend myself for one even in the draft. And I saw an interesting breakdown yesterday of the teams that are spending the most on their wide receivers. They're all bad teams. It's like the Jaguars, the Giants. I'm trying to remember the 5 teams. There are 5 losing teams that weren't in the playoffs that were spending the most on wide receivers. I'll have to look it up. But I don't think that's – I've been saying it all offseason. I don't think it's a smart idea. I don't think it's a winning proposition to go all in on wide receivers. They're all over the place. And if you get a good quarterback, he makes the wide receivers even better. So I don't know if I would draft in the top 5 a guy coming off an injury when you have 7 other wide receivers that are first-round talents. But that's Tannenbaum's take on the most underrated of the wide receivers. We'll see what the Falcons do at 8. Coming up, of course, we pay so much attention to the quarterbacks. We were just talking about the quarterbacks. When we come back, we do it every year. It's Bill Parcells' philosophy on quarterbacks. We'll see who Bill Parcells would like the most in this draft class. The More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Is the best quarterback in this draft class? We'll find out in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We do this exercise every year. Bill Parcells always had the philosophy that when he was looking at quarterbacks, he wanted 30 starts in college, completion percentage of over 60 for their career, and a Wonderlic score of at least 26. And so every year we look at the quarterbacks and we put them through this exercise. And the Wonderlic scores just came out, I think, yesterday for the first time. So now we can do it ahead of the draft. So let's go through through 6 of these quarterbacks. In fact, I have 7 here. Kenny Pickett, of course, is the big name. He has 50 starts, checks that box, and then some. Completed 62% of his passes, checks that box. Wonderlic score of only 17. Not good. But Kenny Pickett checks 2 out of 3 Bill Parcells boxes. Malik Willis. He made 23 starts, so falls a little bit short of 30. He completed 63% of his passes, checks that box. And his Wonderlic score, 32, one of the best in this draft class. So Malik Willis checks 2 of the 3 boxes as well. Then you get to Matt Corral, 33 starts, so he exceeds that benchmark. 67% completion percentage for his college career, checks that box. Wonderlic score of only 15 for Matt Corral. Not great. He checks 2 out of 3 boxes. By the way, for comparison's sake, Lamar Jackson was a 13 for the Wonderlic score. Tua was a 13. Vince Young was a 6 for other quarterbacks and low scores. Matt Corral had the lowest score of the quarterbacks in this class, 15 on the Wonderlic. Desmond Ridder, He made 50 starts in college, just like Kenny Pickett, right? Almost twice as many as Parcells would require. He completed 62% of his passes. Checks that box. Wonderlic score of 19. Too low. So he, too, checks 2 of 3 boxes. So far, all the guys have checked 2 out of 3 boxes. We're getting no clarity. Then you get to a couple of the secondary quarterbacks. Carson Strong, big, strong quarterback, big arm. 31 starts in college, so he just crosses that benchmark. 68% of his passes completed. Checks that box. A Wonderlic score of 22. Close, but not close enough. He checks only 2 of 3 boxes as well. Bailey Zappe played at Western Kentucky. One-year starter. Broke the record. He threw over 60 touchdowns this past year. One-year starter, so he only made 14 starts. He does not check that box. He completed 69% of his passes, which, by the way, is the highest of any of these quarterbacks. Checks that box. And his Wonderlic score, 35, which is the highest of these quarterbacks. So he checks 2 out of 3 boxes. But within those boxes, he just happened to be a one-year starter. Otherwise, the best completion percentage of any of these guys, and the reason why that's important is because the thought process has always been you can't increase or improve accuracy. A couple of quarterbacks have, Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, famously in the NFL, the completion percentage has increased. But typically, even Josh Allen a little bit, right? But your completion percentage usually is that's just who you are. You can't really change that. Some guys have in recent years, but historically, completion percentage would stay pretty constant. So Zappe there with the best completion percentage, set records this past year, best Wonderlic score. He just happened to be a one-year starter. Maybe keep an eye on him. And then lastly, Sam Howell. And I saved him for last because all these other quarterbacks check 2 out of 3 boxes. The only quarterback that checks all three is Sam Howell. 37 starts at UNC, a completion percentage throughout his college career of 64%, and a Wonderlic score of 34, second best in the draft class. Only quarterback of these 7 that checks all 3 boxes. So based off of the Bill Parcells logic and what he would look for in quarterbacks when drafting the position, Sam Howell actually is the best of the bunch. The only one that checks all 3 boxes. And of that next portion, that Billy Zappe out of Western Kentucky, I guess, would be somebody to keep an eye on. As just a guy who didn't have a ton of college experience, but maybe has a lot of upside. Certainly not in the names you would typically hear about this draft class. But we'll see how things play out in the coming years. Sam Howell, the only one that checks all 3 boxes for Parcells. Let me get to this. I have to shoehorn this into the conversation this afternoon. There was a news story that made the rounds online yesterday. The student that they interviewed was so good. There was a party, apparently, on the campus of Oregon, at the University of Oregon, and it got really out of hand. And they even interview one of the students, a senior, who was there at the party. They interview him as part of the news story. So this comes from one of the news networks. Let me see if I have it here. I think it was I'd like to give him credit. I don't know. I think it was the ABC affiliate. The ABC affiliate in Eugene, Oregon, did a story about this wild party that got out of hand in Oregon. And the reason why I want to play it on air is just because the student they interview is so great. He should have a movie about himself. Here's the news report from Oregon the other day.
Now to our top story tonight. What was supposed to be a celebratory day for the U of O community turned into somewhat of a disaster. Take a look yourself. This is on the 16th Avenue between Patterson and Hilliard, and trash was all over the streets. This all started around 10 a.m. when Eugene police say an off-campus party was kicking off with hundreds in attendance. It's estimated around 500 to 1,000 partygoers were there, and police say they were blocking the entire roadway and even spreading into travel lanes and other neighboring properties. Officers even had glass bottles and canned food thrown at them, according to police. And get this, police say among those in attendance were underage drinkers, college kids, and even middle-aged parents. We spoke with this young man. He's a senior at the University of Oregon and was at the large party this morning. He says it was all fun and games.
Honestly, we got there, just you could hear the music bumping from down the street you got there. There are no oceans in Eugene, but there was a sea of people. That was just heads, 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 heads. There was music going, bum, 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 bum. You know what I'm saying? There's people all around. There's people up. There's people down. If you got on a balcony, you were supreme.
Well, sounds like he had a good time. We did also ask him about the claims from Eugene police saying officers had things thrown at them. Here's what he had to say.
only wild allegations were thrown. Nothing was thrown, guys. Come on. It was a peaceful gathering, and it was a good time.
We got to get this guy in the show. That guy, Mark Reimers, I think is how you pronounce his last name, a senior at the University of Oregon that was at this party.
Can we fly him in? I just want to spend a weekend with this guy. He seems like a great time.
That guy is great.
Oh,
love
my.
It.
Heads. That's awesome.
And was that Seven Nation Army? What song was that? Right, I think so. I don't know. By the way, it was their top story. I love that. Their top story of the night, this party that got in hand. The one thing that stood out to me, though, other than the soundbite from this senior student who stole the show, seemed like he was still they interviewed him in the afternoon. The party was in the morning. Seemed like he, you know, the edibles hadn't worn off yet. He was still having a good time. But how about the fact that you have parents, right? They slept that in there. Underage kids, all right, look, it's college, right? College students, but parents are at the party? What's going on here?
Oh, yeah.
Growing up, I don't want to growing up, we had the family that they would throw the parties at their house, and I'm talking like in high school, so certainly, you know, kids weren't 21, and there was a mother, considered a cool mom, the family, they would always go to the concerts, and she would always be there, and that'd be the place, you had to go tailgate there, and the mother was always there participating, and like, it was fun, right? You appreciate it as a kid, like, it's cool, but even as a kid, my buddies and I realized, like, this is a little too much. This lady's strange. Like, she wishes she was still in high school. You're a grown woman with kids. What are you doing? Hanging out with all the kids. And it got to a point where I know my circle of friends, like, we kind of avoided that. We just thought it was too weird. Like, this family is weird. That's not normal to have the parents. They're throwing parties. She would take everyone's keys. That's the one thing, right? She didn't want anybody to drive. And then she'd be down there, like, slapping the bag with people. It's like, what's going on here? You're the mother. You know, like, you want to look the other way, that's one thing. But to actually, like, throw the parties for these high school kids, like, in your house and be participating in the partying, that's a bit much. Now, this is a little different because it's college. And so maybe your kid is 21 and he's in college. And once you get to college, right, you're a little bit more of, like, an adult. You're out of the house. You're living on your own. And so, you know, if the kid's 21 and he's a senior and he's about to graduate, okay, maybe you go hang with your son at college and you wind up at this crazy party. But otherwise, I don't know. Cue up Bruce Springsteen's Glory Days. Like, you're an adult. You're a parent. Go do your own thing and let the kids hang out. What are parents doing at this wild college party? I say, get them out. No good. Did you have any families or parents like that were always down to party with the kids that are too young?
There were a couple families in high school, no doubt. I would say my house was kind of like the place to go as far as the partying went on the weekend, especially after football games and whatnot. However, my parents, you know, never were involved in what was going on, ever. You know, they wanted nothing to do with us youngsters, and they'd do the same thing. Hey, leave keys upstairs, you know, like, just go have a good time, but I'm not getting involved. But there were I'm thinking right now a couple parents who, I've had a good time with, and it's also been like, wait, this is kind of weird.
Yeah, I think it's a little too
much. But in college, like, you know, when I was at Ole Miss, there would be, you know, middle-aged people at these fraternity parties all the time. Like,
really?
All the time. And, it was weird, but at the same time, it was like, hey, look, a buddy over there, you know, he's smacking some keystones, you know, while we're bumping to some EDM music.
It would for me, the weird thing, we would go out in college when you would go out to, like, a college bar, and it was all college, and then you have the one, like, 45-year-old yep. guy in the corner, and it's like, yeah, buddy, this isn't really your scene.
Always had a problem with those guys.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't be here. Now, if you go, it's different. If you're a father, you go with somebody, okay, that's one thing. But there'd always be those random two or three, and they're always dudes, right? You never see, like, a middle-aged woman hanging out because you know the deal. You know, they're there for the college girl. But you always see those, like, these 40-year-old guys over in the corner, and it's like, yeah. This is not really your place to be, which I would say to that story as well. Get the parents out of here. What are you doing at a wild college party when people are throwing things at the cops? Parents hanging out over there.
This is a darty to extreme. You know, they said it was in the morning, so I mean, yeah. They were getting after it early. Good for them.
Yeah. Hey, look, it's the end of the year. A lot of these kids are probably about to graduate. Why not? Have a good time. But Mark Reimers, oh, yeah, that dude's a star in the making.
Get
from the campus
show.
Of Oregon. Yeah, absolutely. The next Jeff Spicoli. We'll wrap up your Wednesday when we come back. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Your beer. Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Wrapping up your Wednesday on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. And the podcasts are always available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. While there, don't forget you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. I already said that. What I meant to say is our app, ESPN Charleston. Just search that in the App Store and find our free app, ESPN Charleston, in the App Store, which you can listen to the show live or on demand. The podcasts are available in our free app, ESPN Charleston, in the App Store. Appreciate listeners hanging with us from at least 10 different states and multiple countries on this Wednesday. We are minutes away from G.G. Jackson. I saw photos online. The stage is set. He's got his little table there. They got the trophies out, all sorts of stuff. He's supposed to make the announcement at 3. You know they always drag this stuff out, right? The announcement will come shortly after 3, hopefully. And South Carolina will be waiting with bated breath. My prediction all along is UNC. We had his coach on the show a couple weeks ago. At the time, he said Gigi's already made up his decision. He just couldn't share it, right? The coach wasn't going to break the news. That was about 2 weeks ago, maybe. I think it's UNC, and I think we find it out in a few minutes. But we'll see what happens and probably react to it tomorrow on the show. Plus, we'll continue to get ready for the NFL draft, which begins tomorrow night with the final picks of our mock draft, and continue to get prepped for the draft tomorrow. Plenty more to do, as always, on the show tomorrow. If you missed anything from today, just find the show on demand. Search the podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.